Hi, good evening. I'm Soraya Mia, and you're watching Awani Global. It's been over 630 days since Russia launched a full-scale invasion on Ukraine. However, the world's attention has currently shifted to Gaza, where Israel claims to hunt and dismantle Hamas. But as of now, almost 12,000 innocent Palestinians have been killed since October 7th, including over 6,000 children. But we're going to shift back the attention to the war in Ukraine, as well as to explore how the global citizens, world leaders, as well as international community should respond to global conflicts in fostering peace. Now, we have on the show today the chargé d'affaires ad interim of the Embassy of Ukraine in Malaysia, Mr. Denis Mikhailuk. Thank you so much for joining us on Awani Global.
It's thank you for inviting.
To speak to you today. Let's just start off with, you know, your perspective or your thoughts about the current situation in Ukraine. How has it evolved, you know, in the past months?
Okay, as you already told, the war started not recently. The war started in 2014 with the annexation of Crimea and then the launching of the war on our eastern territories by Russian Federation, but it was so-called low-intensity conflict, and we were trying to reach some agreement with Russian Federation to cease the hostilities. But February last year, there was a full-scale invasion, and Russian Federation was trying to capture the capital and overthrow the government of Ukraine. And more than 200,000 troops invaded our land and occupied the of eastern, southern parts, occupied the regions of Kharkiv, also Sumy and Kyiv. And this was the plan of Russian Federation to destroy the state and the nation of Ukraine. But the resilience of our nation was a surprise for Russians as well, and for us maybe as well, because we are a peaceful nation, and during the 30 years of independence since the collapse of the Soviet Union, Ukraine was not participating in any of armed conflict. We managed to withdraw Russian invasion, to destroy their attacking troops, and now liberated majority of the territory they occupied in the very beginning. Now Russia is occupying 15% of our territory, and they definitely lost the so-called blitzkrieg, the lightning war they were planning to. But Russia is the biggest country in the world, as you know, and they switched the mode of this war into the war of attrition, the war of potentials. And during last several months, we were trying to counter-offend, destroyed more than 300,000 Russian military on our territory. But it's not stopping Russia from the attempts of provoke artificial hunger, not only in Ukraine, but also in the world, because Ukraine is one of the main contributors for the global food security in the world. To provoke the freezing of the cities by bombarding of our electrical grids and our electrical infrastructure, to make people leave the country and to make lives of civilians unbearable. They also using the nuclear of blackmail. We captured two nuclear power plants in Ukraine. One was liberated. It was the unfamous Chernobyl station, which there was a disaster in 1986, and they keep under their control the biggest nuclear power plant in Europe, our Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant, put the weapons, mines, and their forces there, intimidating the whole Europe by the possible nuclear disaster. It's the war of potentials now. Our forces slowly moving forward, but slowly it's the literal word, because Ukraine now is the most polluted with landmines territory in the world. The minefields might be several kilometers deep. And it takes very significant efforts and takes the big toll of life to liberate our territory. So we are looking for political solution, mostly to force the aggressor states to stop aggression, to stop hostilities, and to come to the peaceful solution. Yeah. The only feasible peaceful proposal was given by the President of Ukraine, Mr. Zelensky, on the G20 summit in Jakarta last year. It's consists of 10 points, which includes, among others, is nuclear security, non-proliferation of nuclear arms, of stopping of hostility, exchange of the prisoners of war, so on and so forth. And this is the open structure, open framework. So every country in the world might join this framework and contribute their efforts and their thoughts to how this new peace structure will be done.
Yeah.
Because among the many goals Russia put before the invasion, it's destruction of Ukrainian state, depriving us of existence as a nation, destruction of the NATO and the European Union, they failed in many of them. But in some of them they succeeded, and one of them is the compromising of the international law and the international institution who had to prevent the war. Because Russia illegally occupying the seat of the former Soviet Union in the Security Council enjoys the veto right, and no solution can be done now by the Security Council without its concern.
Yeah, when you talk about, you know, solution and the 10-point peace plan, we'll talk more about that later, but I actually find it very interesting that you mentioned, you know, the war in Ukraine has started in 2014,
exactly.
You know, during the annexation of Crimea. And I would like to, you know, sort of highlight the fact that when we talk about conflicts and current conflicts, it's the war in Ukraine, which is very devastating, as well as the war in Gaza currently, that has perhaps people would say started over 70 years ago or 75 years ago. So in your thoughts, you know, what are the impact of conflicts such as these long, very, very, you know, deeply rooted conflicts, the impact on civilians, the impact on humanitarian efforts, as well as the impact on the world economies? What do you think?
You know, it's if you make comparison to the Earth as a geological structure, it might be some volcanic areas. So they might become for a very long time. But then some forces want to change their role in the world. They can provoke aggression and wage wars of aggression in these particular areas because some status might be not very complete, or they can have some of, like China does, historical rights for the territory for 5,000 years ago or something like that. So for life of civilians in this area is all this under the threat of that it will be destroyed. It is cannot be stable. You cannot plan the future of your kids, you cannot plan your peaceful life. And this is one of the goals of Russian Federation. They just want to intimidate Ukrainian population to leave the country and to make us a crippled state. They will never succeed in that, but the demographic situation in my country is far from pleasant. We were an aging nation even before the war, and now more than a million people is in the army. More than 8.5 million people, mostly it's women and children, were forced to leave the battle-affected areas and went to European countries who welcomed them and opened the borders. And we will never forget this gesture of goodwill and brotherhood from our neighbors. And that actually makes difference with the situation with Palestine, there the civilians have no room to go.
Yeah. So regarding the Palestine-Israel conflict, as well as the war in Ukraine, right? What are your views on the current situation?
Regarding Palestine, we do hope that the hostilities will end soon, and maybe this outburst of the violence will lead at last to the two-state solution. Mm-hmm. Because if there will be no two states established, and does not matter who will oppose in the current government of Israel or the Arabic states surrounding the Palestine, there should be two states, and these two states, they would not be friendly for many, many years, but they at least will be in peaceful coexistence. Mm-hmm. And Ukraine, as a state, for all 70 years of this conflict, supports this implementation of the United Nations resolutions and two-state solutions. It's our strong stance, and this is the stance of the whole Europe. And we, as you know, the candidate to the European Union.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned earlier about the 10-point peace formula, you know, that was recommended by Ukraine. Actually, he said Malaysia can actually play a role in fostering peace in Ukraine and to support this 10-peace formula. So how do you think Malaysia can contribute in hopes to end the crisis?
We have, you know, Malaysia is one of the first of international victims of our war. In 2014, the MH17 plane of Malaysian Airlines was shot down by Russian-backed separatists from the Russian military installation, took by Russian military to Ukrainian territory, and taken back by Russian military. All of these are already established by the court facts. So Malaysia might play a greater role, expanding its role in joint investigation team here to expand the forensic and legal efforts to prosecute the war crimes of Russian Federation. It's the first view of mine. So it's one of the 10 points where we propose Malaysia to be part of. Malaysia is also a net importer of food. And the situation in my country, deprivation of the trade routes, you felt by the rise of the chicken prices here, because the chicken feed is made of Ukrainian corn.
And we still feel it here.
Yes, we are living in a very interconnected world. It might be perceived as a far, far away war on other side of the world, but we are all connected. And it might be some time lag for a couple of months, but you'll feel it as well. So food security is another position that Malaysia might contribute. The fourth is the freedom of navigation. Malaysia is the country who operates the most densely and most jammed traffic route for the world trade, and simultaneously they could enforce the freedom of navigation, because Russia is blocking our ports in Black Sea and deprives our food going to the international markets. This actually leads to the hunger as a weapon, and might lead to the refugee crisis, because major customers of Ukrainian food industry are the countries of the North Africa and Gulf. Mm-hmm. So if the hunger will be there, it will be the source of the refugees to Europe. It's one of the goals of Russian Federation.
Like you said, you were talking about the impacts, you know, of the war in Ukraine to even Malaysia and the food security. Do you think this, as you predict, you know, is there any end in sight in the war currently in Ukraine? And do you think we would bear the brunt and feel even more of a pinch later on?
Unfortunately, Russia changed its tactics from the blitzkrieg, from the short and victorious war, because they failed. They switch it into the war of attrition. They try to suffocate us because they have bigger human potential. They can recruit more people. And definitely international community can prevent that, because Russia is still, because of the lack of the international sanctions, there are only bilateral sanctions. And Russia still has the opportunity to sell its oil and to sell its grain, actually the grain stolen from Ukraine to some extent, to the international markets. And their income is more than $1 billion per day. So it's 365 billions per day of income. And they spent to the war in Ukraine for these 2 years, $170 billion. So they can prolong this war for quite a while. Mm-hmm. And if the international community will join the sanctions, will tighten this, will cut off this inflow of money, Russia will be forced to go to negotiations and to withdraw its troops. Mm-hmm. Because for Ukraine to stop the war means to disappear. For Russia to stop the war, it means only to distract their troops from our territory. Mm-hmm. That's it. And we also working on establishing the international tribunal now, because as I've already told, the Security Council of the United Nations is blocked by Russian Federation. They are on the veto right. So we are working on establishing the special tribunal for the war crimes in Ukraine, like it was done for the tribunals for the war crimes in former Yugoslavia and in Rwanda. It's a long process, and we encourage Malaysia to participate, especially with your expertise in the international law. You might be of great help here.
I really like your point on, you know, when you talk about the sanctions, you know, like when it comes to the Ukraine and Russian war, you believe that sanctions is a very great tool to sort of end the violence in Russia, I mean, in Ukraine currently by the Russian aggression. But this also reminds me, you know, when we talk about the current situation in Gaza, do you believe sanctions would work to, you know, to end the violence there as well?
I'm not sure, because as in Ukraine as well, the sanctions is not the tool that can stop the war immediately. Uh-huh. It's a long, long time tool, so it suffocates slowly. Mm. And we hope that Russia already cannot provide the state-of-the-art equipment because they have the imported elements there. And so we call for Malaysia not to sell them the semiconductors. You are on the top in the world's production chain. But they still quite capable of producing, you know, tanks, armored vehicles, or cannons, which is the technologies of 19th century. Mm-hmm. So with Israeli-Palestinian war, it won't be stopped by sanctions overnight. Mm-hmm. And I really hope that this war will not last long mm-hmm. because of its scale.
Yes.
You know, it's very limited in comparison to our war.
2 million population in Gaza currently.
It's a very densely populated area, and what is happening now reminds me what happened to the city of Mariupol, sieged and destroyed by Russians completely. And we call for opening of humanitarian corridors for the civilians to leave. It was not done by Russians in Mariupol, and we estimate the quantity of the civilian losses from 25,000 to 85,000 people there.
Mm. So in 3 months.
Yep.
See. All right. Well, now talking about, you know, the international community or the role of the international bodies such as the United Nations, during the 78th UN General Assembly, the Malaysian Prime Minister, Datuk Seri Anwar Ibrahim, has said that multilateralism is crucial to ending Ukraine and the Palestine war. What are your thoughts about the UN's role when it comes to, you know, creating multilateralism?
They are very thankful for Prime Minister Datuk Seri Anwar Ibrahim for the clear and open vocal condemnation of the Russian aggression. It was done by the Malaysian official for the first time. It was done before by Anwar Ibrahim, then he was the leader of opposition, but in his position of the leader of the country, it was done for the first time, and they are very thankful because it's actually a textbook situation. The bigger country invades the smaller one, and the war is on its territory. And speaking of multilateralism, it's the only tool we have. And actually, United Nations, how imperfect it is, it's the only tool they have. It's the only platform there. All 200 plus countries of the world can at least communicate with each other. So we should use this platform to its maximum, knowing its limitations, because the Security Council, it's in the structure of the United Nations, was built to prevent from destruction the world structure after the Second World War. It's long time ago. Mm-hmm. The world changed. New centers of power appeared, and they are now fighting to destroy this institution and to change it somehow to find their way to influence. And we as Ukraine, we see these changes, and we support the changes and reforms of the Security Council for sure. It should be bigger. The voices should be given to different regions like Asia-Pacific, like Africa, in the Security Council. And we would strongly vote for abolishing of the veto right. But, you know, the countries who are already in the Council will never agree to that. So let's be realistic, since it will take time. Mm-hmm. If the United Nations won't be reformed, there might be the reformation forced by war, like it was after the First World War. Then League of Nations was destroyed, and the United Nations established after the Second World War.
Mm-hmm. Well, for currently, you know, like not talking too long terms of reforming the UN currently, but how does the international community, including United Nations per se, you know, deal with the challenges of multilateralism when it comes to an increasingly divided world?
We have the General Assembly, and in this General Assembly, unbinding resolutions, but showing how the attitude of the world, of the majority of the world towards what's happening, are passed through. And we have this resolution of supporting sovereignty and territorial integrity of Ukraine, voted by 141 nations, Malaysia included, and they're thankful for that. This is the one tool. The other tool are the organizations of the United Nations, such as UNESCO or IMO or different. And we are now working with the member countries to deprive aggressor states from being in their bodies, and they are thankful for taking Russia out of UNESCO and out of ICAO already, and we strongly vote for taking them out of IMO governing bodies as well, because this country made the most to destruct civilian maritime freedom. Mm. And these multilateral institutions, they are slow, they're working slow, but they do it steady. Maybe they are not able yet to stop hostilities immediately, but they will definitely use the tool to find the peaceful solutions.
Well, let's very much hope so, because, you know, death tolls are just increasing on a daily basis. But now let's bring the conversation a little bit localized within the ASEAN region. We also have, you know, the crisis in Myanmar that it's been since February 2021. But, you know, aside from that, you know, there's also the war in Ukraine. There's also the war in Palestine, in Gaza. How do you think Malaysia can actually, you know, amplify its voice within ASEAN, to take lead in ASEAN, to amplify its voice on an international scale, perhaps, to, you know, perhaps make a change towards peace?
Actually, Malaysian stance is very clear here, and we cannot but support it. It's to make ASEAN is a more effective tool, to give it some executive mechanisms to enforce. Because now it works only on consensus basis, but if there will be some structure like Security Council within ASEAN established, with the right to enforce some decisions, for example, to block Myanmar's new government or something, it might change the structure. And Malaysia is very active here, as well as Philippines and Indonesia. And I think that day by day ASEAN is becoming more and more important. And they are thankful for joining the Treaty of ASEAN together as the part of Friendship and Amity Treaty. It was done on Cambodia. Mm-hmm. And so this agreement was signed by now a foreign minister.
Mm-hmm. So what steps do you believe Malaysia and the international community could contribute when it comes to rebuilding Ukraine as well as the war-torn countries?
Actually, we already proposed to the government, and there are some steps from the private sectors as well. We now realize that this might be a long war, and that's why we cannot wait till the war ends. Last year was imposed the fast recovery plan. It divided the country into three unequal stripes. The first one is the battle-affected area. The second one is battle-supporting area. There only the crucial infrastructure is rebuilt, but the majority of the country, Ukraine is a big country, it's twice the size of Malaysia, 600,000 square kilometers. So majority of the country is relatively safe. And we relocate workforce and enterprises there. And we encourage foreign investors to come to rebuild what was destroyed during the war. As a positive example, I can say that there is an architectural bureau from Penang, which is participating in architectural plans in renovation of the city of Borodyanka, and now there might come two more cities in Kharkiv region. And it's a small but first step, but very creative and very innovative. And we encourage Malaysia to participate. We have lots of areas where we can boost our cooperation. We still have lots of technologies Malaysia is seeking now, such as like space and aviation. We are among several nations who can launch the space rocket. Malaysia wants to join this club, and you have wonderful sports near equator for the space launching fields. So there are ways for joint ventures, there are ways for investing in Ukraine. We can also do a lot in the drone technologies, in 5G, in telecommunications. Both countries are very well here. We are among the leaders in the world in the cybersecurity for grim reason, but nevertheless, we have the second most attacked nation in the world. Mm-hmm. And our institutions are still working, and we are very good in e-governance. We have proposed to the Ministry of Communications already our platform DIA, which makes the documentation available for everybody in its smartphone. So Lots of areas.
Cybersecurity is a very interesting topic. Perhaps we can discuss that more behind the scenes. But I would like to just ask you one last question before we wrap it up. We have about 1 minute left. You mentioned earlier about the Tribunal for Russian War Crimes. What is the latest update?
More than 50 countries joined that. And so it seems to me just recently, yesterday or the day before yesterday, Switzerland joined. So it's under the construction. It's not a long, not a swift process. For Yugoslavia, the last court sittings are taking place now. So it's 30 years later. But every crime should be punished. And the main idea of the criminal court is inevitability of the crime. So how many years will pass since this crime does not matter, but the revenge will come.
Yep, definitely every war crime should be punished, and I believe that. But that is all the time we have right now. Thank you so much for all of your insights, Mr. Denis Mykhailiuk, from the Embassy of Ukraine in Malaysia. Well, that is all for the episode today. My name is Soraya Mia, and we'll see you again soon.